Hello, and welcome to episode 250 of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today for his 250th... Oh, wait! Neither of them have done 250 episodes. It's just me. But I care for them anyway. First up is Wario Will.
Yeah, oh man, it's been 250 episodes already. So much things is happening, and hang on, just one second.
Oh,
looking
boy.
At the Nintendo Online Switch prices...
Okay, hold on. Was that the guy from Wild Thornberries?
Yes.
Yes, I got it in one!
Yeah.
Not that one.
I mean, we have a lot to talk about in regards to that one, but
yes.
It's just... Yeah.
It's a lot. And also here for his not 250th episode is Talia Tyler.
Hey, I'd apologize to all the listeners who had to listen to that for 250 episodes.
All right, now usually what we like to do is we do something special, but life kind of got in the way. We're doing this a day later because somebody decided to go see Tom Brady play football.
Also, I have a big announcement, confession here.
Oh boy.
I am duly vaccinated.
Excellent.
However, I, on October 1st-ish, was diagnosed with COVID. So that
oh,
was
God.
Also why I was thrown off. I wasn't
wow.
sick, like, badly, but I definitely... I got
you
some muscle aches.
It.
Yeah, you yeah, felt you it. I was congested. My energy was good. But that yeah. is partly why I am delayed on. I wanted to have some guests, but I just wasn't
it's all right.
clearly. So
yeah. And we're just glad you're better. And the vaccinations clearly work because you were only, you know, slight symptoms versus all the symptoms.
Yes. No, which... I would say, you know, I sympathize with people who are confused as to why you can still get sick from this. If you get this vaccine, but from my experience, it was absolutely worth getting it
yeah.
because it felt like a minor cold when that was it. So
and yeah, now it seems like last I recall, right now that's now two members of the Outer Haven actually got COVID now. So yeah, so there's not been two people now.
I'm double vaxxed. I have never gotten it, and I was even in an arena where apparently there was an outbreak, and I was fine because I was double vaxxed and I wore my mask. So as always. Be smart, and let's get out of this pandemic, okay?
Yeah, like that reminds me, I need to get tested this coming weekend, because as you know, I was at New York Comic Con, so here, I gotta get tested as soon as I can. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but enough of that, we are going to celebrate episode 250 just in regular style by doing everything we love, including what have you been playing? And in honor of episode 250. I will reveal all 250 games I have played in the last week.
No, I'm joking. No.
That would be quite an accomplishment. I mean, technically not if you just had all the consoles and everything available and then you just like played them for like a minute, then you could say I've played it. So, but no. Me and Tyler have both been playing Metroid Dread and we'll be breaking it down. I am very close to the end of the game.
Okay. At the beginning. So
you're at the beginning?
I just got the Varia suit. I stopped right
where okay.
the Varia
okay.
suit.
All right, so I will not try and spoil too much, but I am almost done, and I would have been done by now, but I had too much work for 2 days, so I couldn't play the game. But yes, yeah, so this will be light spoilers, and then my review will definitely be coming out this weekend, no doubt. So I'll go first. I've been very hyped for this game ever since they announced it at E3, which seems like a lifetime ago. The first thing that you notice is just the polish. Like, this game, and everyone I've talked to has said it, like, this game is just so polished. Like, you can tell it's not, like, super, you know, HD 4K, blah, blah, blah. And you really don't care. I mean, Samus looks great. The armor is impressive. The monsters that you fight are great. The level design is very deep. Mercury and Tyler, you haven't even gotten, I can already tell you, if you're only at the various suit right now, you haven't gotten to some of the like most eye-popping spots on the planet ZDR, so I won't spoil that for you, but there's some like grand set pieces that are very impressive. And apparently, we'll touch on this in a news story, this game took 4 years to make apparently. And you could tell that they spent a good amount of time on that, on just polishing everything. And it's very much appreciated. The gameplay style is very much 2D Metroid, or Metroidvania if you want to use that term. You know, lots of backtracking, a very expansive world, you know, using your powers in one way, then getting a new power and using them all in a different way. That's actually one of my very small gripes with the game, is that you have so many abilities that you have to remember how to do everything.
That's great. I completely agree, and I'm only at the beginning of the game. I had an early encounter with an Emmy that killed me because it probably would have killed me anyway, because when it grabs you, you don't, like, it's hard to parry. But yeah. I was hitting every button but X to parry. I couldn't remember because there are so many different things you have to press.
Yeah. But it's not as bad as like when I did Neo, where you had like six buttons to press like all the time to do all the attacks. But when you're in very specific battles with bosses, and we'll get to the boss fights in a second, when you're doing like very specific boss battles and you have to do a certain motion to kill them, it can be hard to remember what button you're supposed to press. Okay, this is that Aeon power. Okay, here's the missile shot. Here's the, you know, the plasma beam, and here's how I do my screw attack. You know. It's a lot. And a friend of mine was like, oh, no, it was easy. I'm like, well, good for you, Chad. It wasn't easy for me. And I'm not inexperienced. I love Metroid games. So, but again, that's a small gripe. It's just about muscle memory and all that. But it's a very fun game. I'm hovering right now between a 4 and 4.5 as my review score. There are some flaws, but I feel like this is just so good overall. And the Emmys absolutely live up to the hype. The Emmy, like, every time I die from an Emmy, I just shout, "Dread! Dread!"
Yeah.
So I'm earlier in the game. I've encountered three Emmys. I like them a lot. I think that they're one of the few moments I've encountered through like the first 4 hours that I've played where I think the design is a little bit off. One time, for example, I was in like a very vertical room and I just like wasn't sure where the platforms were below me. So I like walked off this cliff and I just landed on top of an Emmy. I couldn't see him or anything like that. And it got me killed and it didn't feel like it was my fault. Now, fortunately, the game is great with saves. Like, it pretty much, like, when you're getting near an Emmy room, it will save and you'll pretty much be put right back 5 seconds earlier, which I love. I think some people like their games to be more punishing. That is not me at all. I think this game is great with how it respects your time. And yes, I the Emmys are definitely spooky though. Like, when one's getting near you, one's chasing you, when you're getting it, you run into a corner and you can't figure out how to get out, you definitely feel that sense of dread.
Yeah.
I do wish that there was more with the music that was done when the Emmys were around. The whole atmospheric and understated and very sterile. The environments are like super sterile, so you're always in a really white room when the Emmys are chasing you, at least early on. And it kind of takes away from the dread a little bit. I feel like they could have done more to make it scarier. That being said, it's clear that they don't want this game to be a full horror game.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, I kind of see where you're going with, and obviously you haven't seen all the Emmy rooms, but I think I like that kind of minimalist horror because you know it's there. You know the Emmy is coming, and it doesn't matter what's around you. It's just like, you know, I've got to get out of this Emmy room, and you die a lot. And apparently, and I was talking to a different friend, but I'm like, I want to know someone who did not die to an Emmy. And he goes, I think there's a guy who beat the game in 2 hours and he didn't lose a single time to the Emmy. I'm like, come on!
Well, there are people who actually can like speedrun, because again, like the Metro games, there are speedrun completions out there. Bonus.
Yeah.
And yeah, just briefly as well, like, yeah, even when you enter that Emmy room, do you hear that beep, beep, boop? Mm-hmm. Like, you know those beeps. Like, oh god, the Emmy's here. He's here. And then, yeah, you gotta be careful. Right.
I forget, did you get the game, Will?
I do not got the game, but
I
do not. But again, I have seen the gameplays. I've seen the beginning levels of it all, and yeah, I know what you guys are talking about. Again, the Emmys itself, like once you hear that beeps of the Emmys, it's just like, okay, he is here. I gotta be careful, and like just gotta move or stay still. It's just like definitely is that sense of dread, which is the mainstay of it all, but. But of course, when you meet the other Emmys, it gets definitely has more variety to it as well. The six major Emmys.
Yeah. And then one other thing I really appreciated, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, Tyler, was the seamlessness of when you go from gameplay to cutscene back to gameplay. Because Like, you'll be in a room, and then you'll drop down, and then, like, oh, instant cutscene with Samus. Oh, here's a boss. Oh, here's that weird Chozo warrior we saw in the trailer. And then you're like, okay, boss fight time, let's do this. And they do it so seamlessly, like you don't feel like there's no like massive loading screens outside of you going to the different areas of ZDR via, the trains or the elevators or whatever. That's like the only time they do the loading screens. Everything else is just like, brief pause and you're in the next room, if that. So I very much appreciate that. But the cutscenes just add to it and just add to the feeling. There's a lot, and I'm not going to spoil this because of Tyler, but there's a lot of lore in this game, especially for those who played Metroid Fusion. Like, you will not understand some of what's going on if you didn't play Fusion. That's not an insult to the game, but there's a depth here that you need. And they do recap a little bit of Fusion in the opening cutscene, but there's more going on here than you realize. And I really appreciate that because Metroid isn't always appreciated for its story at times, especially with the abomination that is Other M, but or Federation Force, obviously. But this game, like, I feel it perfect, almost perfectly mixes the gameplay and the story and the visuals in just this very fun way. This is a really good game.
Yeah, I love the what they did with the opening cutscene. I didn't play Fusion. I read about Fusion before playing the game because I wanted to catch up to speed and learn kind of the background. So I don't feel completely lost. I would recommend heading to the Wikipedia page for Metroid Fusion and just reading a plot synopsis if you don't mind being spoiled, because this game takes place pretty much right after it.
Yes.
But I love the point that you made about the transition between gameplay and cutscenes. It's indicative of a larger thing that I love about the game. It's a 2D Metroid game, but the production value is really, really good. Like, this isn't it's very dynamic. The camera doesn't stay still. Like, it zooms in, it turns, it goes on angles, and it frames the game in a really interesting way. I was a little bit afraid that Metroid Dread might feel a little low budget, I
Okay, okay,
suppose,
okay,
for
okay.
a main Nintendo game because it's a 2D game with Metroid Prime 4 coming. I thought there was a chance that this game would be a delight gameplay-wise, but slightly underwhelming in other areas. And I just think that the presentation is fantastic. It is totally exceeded my expectations. The gameplay itself is delightful as well. Samus is just so smooth. She controls really, really well.
Yeah.
Outside of, like, as you said, I have the same problem. Sometimes the buttons confuse me. I got killed by that very first weak Emmy because I let go of, like, you get this power that lets you, like, shoot a. This is the first, like, 10 minutes of the game. Sorry. Afraid of spoiling. If you get this power up for your cannon, lets you, like, shoot a super strong blast, and you have to, like, hold down R to load it and then press Y to shoot instead of letting go of R. And I, like, let go of R instead, and then the thing killed me, which was really funny because it's, like, this super weak looking thing. But outside of, like, a few little counterintuitive control things that I will get used to eventually, I feel like they've mastered after Samus Returns, which was a very good game on the 3DS by the same people. They've learned from that game, and you can tell that this is not their first trip with Metroid. It's very polished in terms of gameplay and visuals, and just the all-around atmosphere is great. Every time I head to a new area, I always am impressed by what I've seen, and I've only seen three areas, and they're fairly standard, but just the art style is great. Everything really pops, and the landscapes are so fun to explore. Like in a good Metroidvania game, you want to be exploring every nook and cranny, and Dread does a great job of encouraging that. I'm always blasting every wall to try to see if I can find some secret. I've seen a lot of people talking about sequence breaks and getting things early and all that stuff. Like I am not the type to look up a guide to learn how to do that, but I would love to accidentally stumble into something like that because this is definitely the type of game that rewards searching high and low for everything that you can find. It's a really fun world to explore.
Yeah, I will say, and I'm not afraid to admit this, I have had to use a guide because especially I think it was like 2 hours in, they had Samus honestly on a really linear pass. And then there was this one point where I'm like, I think it was like the third area, and I couldn't advance. And I'm like, I don't get what I'm supposed to do here. and I looked at all the doors. I actually like started utilizing the map because you could tell like what's a door you can use and what one isn't. And it got to the point where I'm just like, what am I supposed to do? So I looked up a guide. This was Sunday or Monday. And it said, oh yeah, now that you have this ability, you can go all the way back to the first area and start unlocking all these other things. I'm like, well, you probably could have told me that in your own way. But they didn't. And so like I've had to use the guide before when I got stuck because there are certain things that are like so subtle. Like, oh yeah, remember this one particular, you know, hole that you couldn't get to before? You could go get there now. And I will say, within the first few hours, I was like begging for the morph ball.
Yes.
I saw it and I'm like, I know how to get in there. I need my morph ball ability. And I tell you, this is a small spoiler, but it's like that's like the fourth or fifth item you get. Like they make you wait for that morph ball.
Yes. I got the morph ball and the first thing I did was go back to the first area.
Yeah.
Because at that point I had the ability to climb those blue balls and the morph ball. And it was like, okay, look, there's probably a ton of like missile upgrades and energy packs and all that stuff out there. What do you think about the game's difficulty? Because I've only beaten, I'm like close to Kraid. I shouldn't say that. But that's it. I don't know.
Kraid's in the trailer. There's a trailer.
Oh, that's true. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I take it back.
Yeah.
I am approaching Kraid. I've beaten that first boss. Outside of the boss battles and like the Emmy hunting you, I find the game to be fairly easy, which I think I like. I don't like getting killed every 3 seconds. This game is more about exploring, but that's the first boss battle was pretty easy as well. What do you think about the difficulty? Well,
Again, I won't spoil too much that happens later. The boss fights do get progressively hard. Like Kraid, when you fight him, he is very tough. Like there's sequences of the fights and you have to be aware of both of your own abilities. And like, I just fought a boss. I don't remember its name, but, it has this ability that sends like energy waves across from you. And I already mentioned the screw attack. You have to use the screw attack to weave in and out of them. Else you'll get hit. It's incredibly hard to do. But yeah, the bosses get progressively harder, especially when certain plot twists happen, which I will not spoil. And there are lesser enemies that are hard to beat as you get. Again, you're early in the game, so it probably feels a little easy to you. But there are other enemies that you know you have to do a specific thing, and they'll bum rush you, and you have to use like your parry attack to blast them away and all that. So there is a lot that is going to go and get harder for you. Is it the hardest game? No, this is not like a Dark Souls, but it doesn't need to be. It's Metroid, and so I think it finds a good balance, and you know, I think you'll see that as you go a little further.
No, I actually like difficulty from where I'm at right now quite a bit. I'm sure it'll scale and get harder, which it should, but I think right out of the gate, they've really struck a good balance. It does not feel overly punishing at any point. And I think that that's really important for a game like this. Like, it's the Dark Souls, part of the fun is overcoming, you know, like it's dying 100 times and figuring it out. I think the bosses in this game sound like that's what they want you to do. But for me, the main draw of a game like this is to enjoy exploration. And when you're dying all the time, you're not exploring. And so I think at least in the early going, Mercury Steam has done a great job of striking that perfect balance of difficulty.
Yeah, and also, and this is something I actually had to use the guide for at times. You will want every energy pack.
Yep.
Especially when you get to the later boss fights, like the one I just went through. They are so tough that then they'll take so much damage out of you that you'll want every energy pack possible and as many missile packs as possible so that you can just take the damage and unload and pray you make it through. Oh boy. But yeah, so again, my review of Metroid Dread will be up this weekend, I have no doubt. And then next week we'll go a little bit more in depth and probably spoil some things. So, Tyler, beat the game already. No. Get good and beat it!
I probably will. My Switch is actually broken. Like, the fan died again.
Yeah.
Been a long time listener. You know, like, 18 months ago, my fan broke. Well, apparently when I took it to U-Break, I fixed, because this was early pandemic, Nintendo wasn't doing repairs.
Right.
They, like, put some other, like, device onto the fan that, like, powered the fan back on, and now that device has died, and they just told me, you should just get a whole new fan for, like, $150.
Yes.
So I told them, $150. I was like, maybe I should just upgrade to the OLED, but
maybe.
that extra $200 is just too much, so... Yeah. I'm playing on my younger brother's Switch is the point. So
smart.
If I beat Dread, I'm going to beat it on that Switch. And then do I have to play it again on mine? Because I just like having the data on my console. It's a real conundrum.
It is. All right, well, how about you? What have you been playing? Since you're not in the Dread Club.
I mean, again, as the recall right now, this past weekend, I have attended New York Comic Con, and yeah, like, as I posted in our Discord chat, again, like, there were some pretty good Nintendo cosplayers. I mean, I did saw an Ike, I saw Tom Nook, like, many different, there was this one very nice, Time Skip Edelgard cosplay, which actually was part of the cosplay championships in New York Comic Con, which was pretty nice. I think she won third place.
Nice.
So, yeah, I was just attending New York Comic Con. Overall, very nice experience. Like, saw definitely mostly did my autographings. I did met a Veronica Taylor again, got my Three Houses game signed, the special edition. Also saw Christina V again, saw Erica Hollicher, and of course the main highlight for me was basically see George Takei. So just such a humble guy, and yeah, I mean, again, obviously the main highlight, I know you would like it, Todd, that AEW was there, a lot of Star Wars over there, including and of course everybody's favorite John Cena.
My favorite, I saw a clip of her was Thunder Rosa, the comic for. So yeah
she was there. She was there.
Name drop right there.
Yeah, she was there. So yeah, it was pretty cool. So yeah, overall, like, these past few 4 days has been very nice. So yeah, good for Nintendo, good for things and all that. So yeah, New York Comic Con, definitely a great time. Like, I can't wait for the next major convention, which is Anime NYC in November. So that's probably when the next time you won't be hearing from me then. So November's the next convention. But going back on topic, what I've been playing is mostly I've been going back into Lost Judgment, and briefly again, the school stories, we're going to different clubs of the mystery club, the boxing club, all these things. Like, if you love if you love the Yakuza games, if you love like this, the crazy side stories, be they're all reasonings and all that, it's just like it's a fun time. Lost Judgment, great game, especially with like the two major figureheads, Nagoshi and someone else, unfortunately left at Yakuza Studios for better pay or whatever. But yeah, Lost Judgment, fun game, overall great. And just continuing on with it. And I am playing another game, but again, we are not obligated to cover that game to its company, so I won't say that game. But there is one game I'm very excited for coming up this month, which is the new Super Mario Party, which is coming up at the end of the month, last recall. Yeah,
no, Mario Party. No, Mario Party Superstars.
Mario Party Superstar. Thank you. Yeah, Mario Party Superstar. That was the title. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, Mario Party Superstar coming at the end of the month. So I'm hoping to get that down the line before. Hard to believe it's already November already. Yeah, until Shin Megami Tensei 5 comes out next month. So yeah. Overall, yeah, that's what I've been playing. Lost Judgment, getting ready for Mario Party. It's pretty much that. Of course, we end with the Faye banner, which we are expecting to get on Legendary banner coming out very soon. So wrap up those orbs. And just briefly, I'm surprised they actually continue on with the Fire and Ice storyline, especially with that upgraded Fjorm, which, okay.
Oh, I hate her. I mean, I had a good team, honestly, to take her down between my Byleth and Larcy in her Champions of the Past form. And even still, like, it was just wrong. Like, there were times I could easily beat her, and other times it's like, no, you can't beat me. And some of these stats are complete crap. All right, I have regular Fjorm, and if you're next to my regular Fjorm, you get a power boost. So what I always try and do is put Fjorm next to a character that's about to attack. And so I do that to go up against, you know, the powered up Fjorm. And for whatever reason, when Byleth is not next to her, he does more damage than he's next to her. Than he does when he's next to her. That doesn't make sense. The whole point is to power her up.
Yeah, I don't know. Personally, for me, I had no problems because I had three Fallen Edelgards going at her, so I'm pretty much good. So yeah, but and also with the bonding events is back again. So a nice little tidbit story, with the current update and a new newer finds that's happening with certain recent characters like the Levitane and all that. So there's also nice that. But either way, that's it. Faye, so far good. Get ready for the Legendary banner, and yeah, we'll see what happens next.
So, all right then. So with that, we will now head on to the news because it's honestly been a quite a bit. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. And first, Metroid Dread. So we do have some slight news on this because first off, the sales have not been fully reported, but we do know that it has done well in Japan so far, selling a little under 100,000, which for Japan is actually pretty good. Because again, they're very much mobile nowadays. Outside of Animal Crossing, of course, they love Animal Crossing.
And I'm just gonna like I've, because again, I actually have attended the opening day for Metroid Dread over in Nintendo NY, and there are a lot of people actually lined up for that game, including for the special edition. Which, yeah, even I did ha hope to have to help our boss get the special edition. And you, I don't know, I think this thing is definitely a good track, at least getting at heading to that 500,000 sales. I feel like it seems to be at least a good solid game to say the least,
Yeah,
yeah.
I think definitely its biggest sales will be coming from the UK and the US. And according to the UK notes that have been posted, it's already done. It's had one of the biggest openings for the Metroid series there, second only to the original Metroid Prime, which did very well on the GameCube. So I think the US will carry the bulk because we're very much Metroid fans here. I'd be shocked if it's not already at 1 million in a week. I mean, I know that might be a little presumptuous, but this was a big Metroid title, and this is the only one we're gonna get until Prime 4 maybe possibly comes out. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Again, the official numbers have not come out yet, but to start, it looks like it's having a solid opening. Now, that being said, there is a certain dark story for Dread, and it has to do with, wait for it, the credits. Oh, well, what do you mean by that, Todd? Oh, let me tell you. So, as you know, how game development works is you work on a game and you get credited for it in the credits when the game is over, or in certain cases at the beginning of the game, depending on the title. But in the case of Metroid Dread, apparently there is a bit of controversy over who has not gotten their name in the credits, because according to reports, Mercury Steam has a clause in the contract of every single worker for their games, and it states that if you work on less than 25% of the game, you will not be included in the credits. Now, at first, that might not seem like a bad thing, but we got to break this down a little bit more. All right, because if you recall, Metroid Dread was, sorry, got lost on something, but it was made in about 4 years. So that means that by the rule of Mercury Steam, you had to work on the game for a year to get into the credits. That's a long time, and there are plenty of jobs that don't work a year on the game. Sure enough, multiple people posted about it, including a 3D artist who said, quote, "I would like to sincerely congratulate the Metroid Dread team for putting out such an exceptional game. I am not surprised with the quality of the game, as the amount of talent on that team was through the roof. I know it firsthand because despite not appearing in the game's credits, I was part of the team for about 8 months." And I'm sorry, but if you work on a game for 8 months, especially if you're like a 3D artist, which, as me and Tyler noted, you know, there was the Dread is a beautiful game, you deserve to be in the credits.
Yeah, like we heard these kind of stories before. Like, especially, I think I recall we're going to like Nippo Ichi Software Games. Like, yeah, like if you even had a hand in this game, like there's no small roles in a game production. Like, whatever you contributed, like heck, if you play like in 1 month, 2 months, sure, you can probably like put it at the end of credits whatsoever. But again, the fact that you had a hand in a game productions, you gotta be mentioned at least, like. It's just like it's just not fair. Like, okay, I put in like work, no matter how big or small you are, like you gotta be ha given credit, or else it just feels like very ungrateful from the studio or publisher.
It's one of those weird stories where you just wonder who benefits from not putting the names in the credits. Like, I admit, I never checked the credits to see who worked on the project, but it doesn't hurt anybody to people's names in there. You know, it's not like that would extend the credit. Like, most credits are skippable these days anyway. Like, I just feel like it's an odd thing to do, just to not give people credit, especially because a lot of these people, they say that they found their work in the actual end product. It's not like they worked on it and then their stuff didn't get in, which should still get mentioned, but maybe it's a little bit more understandable. No, these people have work that is in the end result. I have no idea why you wouldn't credit them. And if I was somebody, next time Mercury Steam has a job opening, I would think twice about signing up. You give a lot of time to work on a game like that, and it's important for people in the industry to see what you've done.
Right. I mean, like, have that in your portfolio. Like, it's almost the same thing. Like, oh, you mentioned the caterers that help you feed you during this time of productions. Like, I don't know. Like, look, mention your local Starbucks next door. Like, yeah, thanks to my Starbucks that helped me fuel all those long nights of production. Like, yeah, you don't mention that. Like, wow, kind of ungrateful, don't you think? So yeah. It's just, yeah, you have a hand of it. Put it, it's, and like, again, you worked on this thing, so you should at least get some notion of acknowledgement that, yes, I worked on this game. Yeah, notice me. Yeah.
Yeah. And to put this on, in my perspective, I work, as I've noted multiple times on this podcast, I worked on the game Saints Row the Third. I was brought in as a QA tester in the final stretch of the game. I was there for 3 months at Volition, June, July, August, as an intern and intern QA tester. And I was put in the, credits. And you can say, well, wait, well, you were QA tester. Of course you're putting the credits. No, I was, if they had the Mercury Steam rule, I wouldn't have been in the credits, but I was in the credits. And I even had a picture of myself with some of my teammates in the credits. So if they could put it in for a 3 month QA tester who never worked there again, why can't they do it for these guys who've been there again, 8 months, 11 months doing vital roles? And it really doesn't make sense. As Tyler says, it's not hard to put a name into a credit. It's put the name, space, or enter tab, new line, enter new name. It's not like it's, you know, I have to create a whole level just for the credits. It's a blank screen with white text. Not hard. So, just, it's annoying. And I feel bad for these people. Because they worked hard. Again, these two guys we mentioned, one was 8 months, one was 11 months on the job. They clearly had a big part in making this game, and yet they said, oh, you didn't work here a year, so you're not in the credits. That makes no sense at all. This is like the sad part of us being gamers, is that sometimes we hear the bad stories from the game industry, like what happened with EA or Blizzard and all of them. And be better. Is it that hard?
Apparently it is in this industry.
No, yeah. In this world, Will. In this world.
Okay.
All right. So let's now move on to a positive story. G4. It's back. Well, it's almost back. So they officially announced that G4 TV will be coming back this November. Oh, wait a moment. Weren't they supposed to be coming back in the summer? Yes, that was the original plan. Obviously, things changed. Let it go. So, it will be officially launching on November 16th. So, we are literally about a month away from G4 TV returning. And for those of you wondering, well, how can we watch it? Well, it will be on cable packages, including Verizon Fios, COX, and Xfinity TV. There will also be doing streams on like Twitch, and of course, be still doing YouTube and Twitter content like they've been doing for a while now. And they are promising fans that this will be a network that will listen to the fans, and the content will be for the fans, and hopefully not 12 hours of cops like the original. Those cops, cheaters, and something else. And I'm like, wasn't this supposed to be a gamer channel? Like, at times they pushed it, but they did also confirm a lot of their lineup. Like, they will have Attack of the Show and X Play Back.
Sweet.
They will have a show I actually think we would be good at. It's called Boosted. It's putting players in like esports stuff that, and they have like no experience in it.
Oh, okay. Like the Nintendo championship thing. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that. So, like seeing like the level one players as they try and rise through the ranks, I think that'd be fun for us. They will have a lot of esports content, which was not surprising because they are the gaming channel. So, again, November 16th. I am very excited for this. I have Xfinity, so I will apparently be able to watch it. Yay! And I'm just happy because this was the network that helped me embrace my nerddom. It was this network that showed me, hey, there is a thing called the Electronic Entertainment Expo. You know, there are people who understand that Nintendo is amazing, you know, and not just me. And it was a very dark time in my life. But I missed it when it went off the air.
Same here.
And now it's back. And granted, it's not going to be exactly the same. There's some of the key hosts aren't going to be there, like Morgan Webb and Olivia Munn and Kristen Adams. But some of the classics are back, plus the new hosts. We need new blood. That's fine. And I will still campaign for G4 to hire me. So, and maybe if I get in, you guys could be like my assistants or my gophers, you know?
I mean, like, yeah, just the revival of G4 on the TV show. I mean, again, I still remember back in the early 90s cable days. Like, yeah, I still remember that whole X-Play episode with Adam Sass, like, Alec Mullins. And just like that moment was infamy on that show. It's just, it's good to finally see like that reboot of that network, which... Again, since from the days of Tech TV and now back alive now to this modern day, it's good. I mean, now we're seeing like old stars, old things that we thought died back in the 90s or the early 2000s now finally got make it a comeback, which it's good to see.
I think Scott the Waz is going to be on there.
Yes! I've been hearing rumors about that, which would be awesome because that would be a perfect channel for Wozniak.
He recently announced that he's going to be on TV channel undisclosed, and he said channel undisclosed like 2 days before they announced that G4 is coming back. So I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. Well, he was on the pilot episode of Code Monkeys. He was the one who was the creator of the company, and then he sold it to Larity, and they had Wozniak as himself, and that was. It was like, wow, we got the Waz. Okay, then that's pretty cool. Like, he is the most laid back guy on the planet. All right. Do you remember when he was on Dancing with the Stars? He was on Dancing with the Stars, and he was like the second or third elimination, which is not surprising. He's not a dancer. All right. When he got eliminated, he wrote a letter to everyone on the show. Like, handwritten, and it was just, like, apparently the most lovely letter ever showing how great of a human being he was. That's the Waz, alright? He will voice himself in Code Monkeys, he will go on Dancing with the Stars, and he'll handwrite you a letter, you know, thanking you for the experience. You know, that's the Waz, alright? So, great man. Alright, next up we got Pokemon news, like a bunch of Pokemon news, actually. The next episode of Pokemon Evolutions came out, focusing on Lysander and his extinction plan, genocide in the Pokemon world. What an idea. I really want to talk about this for one reason. I'm honestly a little bored with Pokemon Evolutions. Because when we talked about this a lot, but with Twilight Wings, every story except for like one really resonated with me because they delved into stuff that we don't really think about, like B and her training to become strong enough to fight Leon, or Nessa and her self-doubt about whether she can be, you know, a good gym leader, and Olena and what it means to be the assistant to President Rose. With these episodes of Evolutions, they're not really diving into new territory. The only one that did was the Lily episode, where we see her team up with Lunala for a bit before getting taken over by Necrozma, and that was cool, but they didn't like expand upon it. And then all of a sudden, hey, or here's Lysander, and you know why he's doing what he's doing. We know what he's doing. If you played the game, you know what he's doing. And the Leon one, like, I like the idea of him like, dealing with his doubt over not being able to fight Eternatus, but they focus so much on the battle that we've already seen multiple times. I feel like they're wasting an opportunity to, you know, have another great, and again, it's beautiful animation. That's not the issue. It's just, as a storyteller, I already know this story. Like, isn't the point to tell the ones you don't know? You know, that's what makes Twilight Wings or even Poketoon, which had a new episode out. That's what makes those so special, is that they're telling these new stories or these different perspectives. And Evolutions just isn't really doing that. And it's kind of frustrating. Yeah, I know. I'm harping. It's what I do.
Just a small bit. Because I still remember, like, even with that whole like a Slugma special on the Toons, is like, we've always been so like used to, we're going to like the Ghibli style. I mean, again, it's always with the deeper meanings of like of each episode. And I don't know. Maybe it's because like we always wanted to have have a bit more story or a bit more something more for Demon Meat aside from like the general entertainment purposes, like with like I don't know, the every single day showings of like, oh, what's the lesson of the day and all that. So I don't know, it's definitely I don't know how it is with the Pokemon company over there, but it's definitely they're trying to establish that balance between like, oh, what is the lesson of the day versus yeah. like, yeah, actually showing something a bit more deeper, like a la Ghibli of some sorts.
Yeah. And then the other Pokemon animation that I actually wrote a review for was Pokemon Secrets of the Jungle, or as I like to call it, Pokemon Tarzan.
Oh, yeah.
It is literally the same story, with a few exceptions, okay? Boy in the forest, okay, gets adopted by Pokemon, or in this case, the apes from Tarzan. Discovers humans. Why didn't you tell me I was human? Phil Collins songs plays. No, that's I appreciate you both getting that reference, though. I'm glad I'm not the only one who remembers that. I'm good. I'm human after all, you know, but I'm also a Pokemon. The ending was so weird, though. I won't spoil the ending if you haven't seen it, but they take this 180. It's actually entirely different from Tarzan, but they take this 180 of an ending that makes absolutely no sense, and they're trying to sell it like it's brilliant, but it's really not. And also they have the most one note Pokemon villain ever. All right. He is so one note his name sounds evil. Zed.
Oh, okay.
You know, the Power Rangers villain. Yeah, he's back, but he's in Pokemon form now. So no, but he is so one note that his motivation was that he wants to prove he's right.
Wow.
That's it. There was something, okay, I won't spoil it, but there was a team of scientists that are trying to prove something. And he has this theory that will, you know, something or other, blah, blah, blah. And the lead scientists won't do this test because they know it'll hurt the Pokemon. Or in this case, the Zarude. That's not a spoiler, but it's the Zarude. And he doesn't care because he wants to prove that he's right. And he's willing to do absolutely horrible things just to prove that he's right. That's his only motivation. It's not even like, I'm doing this so that, you know, the world can benefit. He tries to sell it. It's not true, though. He just wants to prove that he's right. And I'm like, that's it?
Sounds like 80% of humanity.
Oh, that's true. That's true, but I expect more from my Pokemon villains. All right, even Giovanni has more, you know, motivation than that.
Giovanni,
yeah. Or Cyrus, you know, his was like, you know, the world is, you know, corrupt and diseased, and we deserve to go back to point zero. You know, that's deep. You know, or Magma and Aqua, and you know, Team Flare with Lysander. You know, his was a very deep motivation. He was not one note, but regardless, my review of that is up. It is on Netflix if you want to watch it, and. See what you think, and I'm pretty sure you'll agree, though, it is basically Pokemon Tarzan. They do have, though, and it actually kind of ties back to Dread, they have these point-of-view shots that are absolutely stunning. I haven't seen the anime, but I think it's like Attack on Titan and how they handled some of the zipline battles that they do there. What were those?
3D maneuver gears.
Yeah, the maneuver gear. Yeah, they do a scene with Pikachu and the Zarude. And they basically kind of do that with a point of view shot of like weaving around this bad guy. And it's actually really impressive animation. So I will applaud them on that. All right. Next up, which I could tell Tyler's excited for because he hasn't talked for a while. we are talking about Daddy Sakurai.
Woo.
Yeah. So he has.
I'm very excited. I don't know what the story is, but I'm very excited about it.
I know. This is all not breaking news, but it's pretty close. He has confirmed that there will be a third DLC. I'm kidding. There's not a third DLC pack. But he has illuminated for those curious about what is going to happen with Team Sora or Project Sora. Now that the main game is done, and right now he notes that they are basically working on some PR stuff. They're working on balancing, managing certain events like with the Spirit Board or certain tournaments. But the staff is slowly starting to leave the project overall because they obviously don't need that many people for it. And thus they'll start working on the next project, whatever that may be. And then it goes, as for Sakurai himself, he says once the work is fully done, he wants to just drive around Japan. I like that.
I like that too. It's a great idea.
Yeah. The only downside is that he doesn't know if he can do it for two reasons. One is COVID. Very fair, especially since Japan's had a surge since the Olympics. And the second, and I'm kidding you not, is his commitment to his cat, Fukara.
I do not blame him. As like, if any listener is a cat person, cat owner, like, you know how it is. Like, when you want to, like, the cats own you. You will do anything. You are their butler. You cannot argue with them. And
that's terrible.
The whole and the whole driving thing. Like, yeah, driving around Japan after Sora is like, again, he's clearly earned it. Definitely. Yeah. And especially, like, if I remember correctly, like, I know he talked about he owned has a model car. He talked about in the Harada showcase. I forgot the model name. I forgot. But yeah, right. Like, he clearly deserves it after all the times. And after the whole Sora thing, sure, definitely, clearly deserves it. Yeah.
I can't believe it. A stupid cat is going to stop him from the living his dreams. They can live for weeks without humans around. Sakurai,
But you got to remember that Sakurai is a compassionate soul, and he would not wish harm on anybody, even the fans that have driven him almost insane with all their requests.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So if he could treat them with such kindness, and he doesn't even know them, how do you think he treats his cat? He probably treats his cat like a king or queen, however you want to term the gender.
Does.
So. But Sakurai, if you want to drive around Japan, you go right ahead. In fact, I think you should get yourself a limo. You get yourself a limo and you have someone drive you all over Japan. I bet you Nintendo would fund the entire trip as a thank you for all you've done with Ultimate, one of their best-selling games on the Switch and the best-selling fighting game of all time. They'll get you that limo, and a chauffeur will drive around you. Hey, bring your cat. The cat would love the limo, I'm sure. And you can look out and see all of Japan, and you don't not have to worry about driving yourself. You deserve it, Daddy Sakurai. All right? You deserve it.
Knowing Sakurai, though, he will probably constantly find inspiration for his next big project while he's out there. You know, a lot of people, the game developers will go and travel and see a location that captures their imagination. I'm sure Sakurai would be brainstorming the entire time he's away.
Well, that's actually how, I know he's not done that in a while, but that's actually how Miyamoto did it. He did Zelda because he liked exploring his backyard and areas of Japan, and then he came up with Pikmin while he was gardening. So I totally could see Sakurai doing that. Maybe if he goes and sees the mountain ranges, he'll go, man, I wish I could fly over there. Wait, fly? Like Pit? Kid Icarus sequel confirmed.
Sequel.
You wish. There's gonna be another, like, what was the last time? Is it? It feels like been 5-6 years now. It feels like, I don't know.
It's been a while.
It's 10.
Yeah. That was early
it's
3DS.
Close to it.
It was early 3DS, man. So
2012. So 9 years.
Yeah, I bet you we'll get that sequel before Skies of Arcadia's sequel will.
I wish.
Oh, we know. All right. Next up, okay, Animal Crossing. They had a direct. Yay. Okay, partial yay. So there is free content you could totally get, and it's actually out right now if you want it. But there's also paid content. It's called the Happy Home Paradise content. And that's paid, unless you get Nintendo Switch Online's expansion pack, in which you can just get everything together. We'll be talking about that later. But if you don't have that or you don't want that, you can get it for $25, one-time fee. So and it will launch on November 5th. It'll obviously include a whole bunch of things for you to expand your home and your village and island, whatever.
And just a note on the bright side of this direct. It's like, again, we see Brewster coming back again, which, again, everybody likes to call him composed master of Brewster. Again, he having the coffee and all. So yeah, including we're going to the fact that you can invite your friends over for a good guy's cup of joe. Also, as I said in the direct, there's more additions, including the partitions of walls, a hanging light sources. So basically improving much more on all different customization of your home, as well as the other villagers. As well, they also mentioned like additional storage spaces, including like raising the limits of bridges and yeah, bridges and ways from different items, including like if I recall correctly, yeah, like some per- like permanent ladders, so you don't have to always have to spend your miles or bells, whatever, on like permanent fixtures. So overall, it's like also including like new characters that will be coming to your village as well, your island. Like overall, it is definitely a lot of content if you're an Animal Crossing fan. So you definitely eat good if you like want to invest more into your island that you already have, which again we've seen some crazy things,
yes,
as with the fans. And of course there's also the thing as well, Cap'n's back, so yeah, you can also hear the shanties once again. And yeah, like just the free content itself right now, it is pretty meaty. So if you're a fan of Animal Crossing, yeah, you're looking pretty good. Which I'm just kind of sad, like they even mentioned this will be the last free content update. Which
yeah,
I hate that caveat. Like, oh, this is the last free content. Boo.
Pretty much. So, but yeah, again, there's free content, and there's the Happy Home Paradise, which is the paid content. So. If you're looking for the memes have been so heavy, like people talking about like coming back to the island and the villagers not exactly being happy to see them, you know, because they've been ignoring them for so long. That kind of just shows the world that we're in right now, that, you know, at one point in time you saw the villagers every day, but now that things kind of opened back up slightly, it's just like, bye villagers, you can live on without me. And now the content's back. Okay, hey, I'm back for a little while. That's the end. That's the real Animal Crossing lifestyle. You're with them for a while, then you leave them for a while, then you're back, then you leave them, then you're back. Oh gosh, that's why I don't do Animal Crossing. So, oh, also, I saw one that someone actually completely recreated part of Link's Awakening.
Ah, okay.
So that again, the ingenuity and creativity is just inspiring. All right, next up we have Kingdom Hearts. This is also slightly breaking news. As you know, the cloud versions of Kingdom Hearts, basically the first three games plus all the side games and some of the mobile titles, are all going to be coming to Switch via cloud gaming, which is curious for various reasons. But now there is a small update on it, mainly that the quote native versions, aka physical copies or at least digital copies, non-cloud copies, might actually happen. Might. Okay. So, apparently Kingdom Hearts series producer Ishiro Hazama noted that it might be possible to do the native ports in the future, although the team previously ran into issues, as we talked about, like with capacity and the graphics and blah, blah, blah. Here's what he said. For some, our director Tetsuya Nomura had exposed his desire to deliver the Kingdom Hearts series to Nintendo Switch players, him having seen and heard the demands, and so a great deal of consideration went into this internally. Bringing these titles to Nintendo Switch proved quite difficult for various reasons, including the storage capacity of the hardware, but we're excited that we were able to make it happen the first time using the cloud service. At this moment in time, the production of a native version is undecided. We believe that the cloud version is currently the best way to deliver the Kingdom Hearts series to Nintendo Switch players, but we are always excited to hear their feedback from our fans and want to thank them for all their support, end quote. Here's our feedback. Give us the native versions!
Yeah, like, with Kingdom Hearts 3, okay, fine. I'll give it a cloud service, as you said, mentioned before, Todd. But yeah, with the prior games, I mean, again, the fact that we had Final Fantasy 9 or even Final Fantasy 10.
12, even.
Like, even released it on physical copy only in the Asia territories. It's just like, yeah, it should be okay. It should be well enough to actually can put those first games onto the cartridges. So I feel like it is doable, I feel like.
Yeah, again, the original, the first two main games were PS2. The Switch has better graphics than the PS2. There's no doubt about that. Then there's Chain of Memories, which they improved to the, you know, PS2 style graphics. Same with Dream Drop Distance and all of them. Kingdom Hearts 3 was the only one that was made with the Luminous engine, yes, which was engine as Final Fantasy 15, which they also tried to bring the Switch. remember that was like a rumor for over a year.
And all we got was the pocket version.
I refuse to acknowledge that version. Anyway, but we might get this on a physical version, and I would love that. I'm going to try and get the cloud version because I want to play these games again. But yeah, I would prefer it being native. You know, that's easier. It's simpler. You know, you don't deal with cloud and all that because that won't work for everybody. Like that's the problem with the cloud thing is that it won't work for everyone. So.
Yeah,
we'll
you really need to have a plug-in for the cloud version to work.
I think
if you're not directly plugging it into your Switch, or if you have the OLED, you don't need to buy a separate adapter to connect your Wi-Fi, but you want to have a direct connection.
Yeah, wire connection is highly recommended to do so. Yeah. Yes.
Which I don't have. I have. I didn't know you could do that with the Switch. I guess I didn't know about the adapter. But like I have strong Wi-Fi. Like I have really strong Wi-Fi. Like that's what I've been using on my Switch, and I've barely ever had a problem. But if you need like the hard wire for the cloud versions, then I'm kind of screwed because I don't have the adapter or whatever. I can obviously get it, but it doesn't mean I will. So yes, native versions, please. Also, Atlas, give us Persona 5 on Switch. Since we're just listing off the dream scenarios, you know. All right, next up we have the OLED sales. Much like Metroid, I almost said Prime. Metroid Dread. We want to hear more about Metroid Prime 4, but they released on the same day the Dread and the OLED. Dread OLED. There's a tandem for you. And so far it does seem to be doing pretty well. Japan had over 100,000 sales of it. The UK had a similar amount, but it was less than when the Switch Lite came out, which is not that surprising. You know, the Lite was a lighter price. And of course, the OLED is a slightly improved model. So it's going to be interesting. This is going to be the interesting one, because when I remember when the Lite came out with the Link's Awakening, it sold like a million in that first month. And it was very much a driving factor in Link's Awakening selling that well. And now I'm wondering if that'll happen with, you know, the OLED and Dread. I don't think it will. I think the game will obviously sell much more than the console at present.
Right. Again, like, unless you're fully like a total newbie, obviously the OLED is the version you want to get.
Yeah.
And like, unless you're like us, you have the OG switches, the first models without the extra battery life, then that's probably
there's no extra battery life in the new one. Like they just improved the screen, gave us some quality.
Right.
Stuff.
It's just like the currently updated one, basically. Yeah.
So. But like, and that's the thing is that I've heard honestly good things about the OLED, you know, how it looks, how it feels, and everything. And they're not saying it's a bad model. It's just that, much like Tyler was joking about earlier, you know, do I want to spend that extra $200 to get the OLED or just try and fix the Switch I have? And if I was Tyler, I would just try and fix the Switch I have. But that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be for every person. If you play in handheld mode, from what I guess people like John Cartwright, like big people in the Nintendoverse, are loving their OLED models. But at that price point, it's such a jump. The Switch Lite did, as you said, sold significantly better in its initial launch. But the global chip shortage is like critical here. True. Because... even car companies are having a hard time getting these chips. So I think we have to temper our expectations and maybe not jump to conclusions. Maybe demand is higher for this than it currently seems.
Yeah.
It's not a bad start by any stretch either.
It was never going to be like, oh, this sells 2 million in the first week. That was never, no one would have said that. All right. It was just the question was always, how well will it sell? That's the only question we had. Not unlike with Dread, you know, will it be the next million seller? I would be shocked if it wasn't. But I think for some who want that better, higher, slightly higher quality experience, or just want an upgraded version of their Switch, they'll go for the OLED. So, bully for them. I'm not one of them currently. That could change. You never know. So we'll just have to see. All right, and finally, I'll let Tyler handle this one. It's about emulation. Tyler?
Yeah, so this story comes from Kotaku. They were running a thing about emulation and Metroid Dread. They were saying that Metroid Dread runs great on 4K emulators if you wanted to download it illegally onto your PC. And the reaction from the public was not great. Kotaku was called out for basically promoting piracy and illegal behavior, which sparked this whole discussion about Metroid Dread's price point, game preservation, and emulation's overall role in gaming. I think the most interesting part of the story really comes from the Metroid Dread's value. I think a lot of people were complaining about the fact that the game is $60 and it's a Switch exclusive, which I think is kind of
stupid.
Yes, it's a baffling lack of understanding about how the market works. Right? I mean, the people out there who will say, oh, well, you should emulate this game because, you know, Nintendo is charging you too much for it and the value isn't there. Look at games like Hollow Knight and Axiom Verge and games that are similar in their genre but cost way less. They're only $20 and Metroid Dread is $60, therefore that's overpriced and you should steal it. You're paying for a brand more often than not. I think it's like an important basic understanding of how economics work. It was definitely a weird thing for me to see how people were reacting to this. Did you guys see this story?
I saw it loosely. I saw Keith, or our boss, King Koopa Keith, posted the video of it in our Discord, and I didn't think about it that much because I'm like, oh, someone found a way to port it onto the PC. Yeah, okay, sure, why not? I didn't care because I'm like, I would never do it with my PC. My PC sucks. So, and I wanted to play it on the Switch. But now that I'm hearing, you know, how big this got, I can understand certain elements of it, like the outrage that someone decided that, like, Kotaku, who was, you know, very controversial, was basically promoting piracy. You know, that's not kosher at all. And the price point thing is stupid. All right. First of all, we all acknowledge that there are indie games that are as good, if not better, at points than Metroid or Castlevania. Just to rope them in there. The difference is team size, amount of time to make the game, and what it took to make the game. Because as I noted earlier, Metroid Dread took 4 years of a big team at Mercury Steam and Nintendo to make it work and look polished on Nintendo Switch. The graphics, you look at Axiom Verge and look at Metroid Dread and try and tell me that, you know, you shouldn't pay a little bit more for Metroid Dread graphics alone.
Right. And again, the fact like this game has been in such the work for such a long time. Apparently it was like dead and now it's been revitalized. It's just like, yeah, it's, you should, this, if you want to like a franchise to succeed, then you want to like invest money, pay the product, pay Nintendo, so actually continue with this games. And like I've heard also like some people like comparing this game to like Shantae and the Seven Sirens, which like that's a horrible comparison, but and apparently they said like Shantae was actually a better game than Metroid Dread, which is like
lies,
dude. Like, come on, that's a horrible take. And secondly, like if you want some. Like, again, Dread has been worked in such a long time, and a franchise that has been dormant until we can get Metroid Prime 4 is just, like, yeah. Like, definitely pay, like, again, prove your money's worth, like, buy the product and show, again, help with the sales. Like, if you want a franchise or series to succeed, then yeah, definitely buy them. I mean, heck, even if there is that, I mean, I kind of talked about this also in my A1 podcast, but if there even is, like, the option, like you get that preview of it, be emulation or whatever, but you still want to support the official developers and publishers, then yeah, I still buy them at the end.
Yeah, for the record, I love the Shantae games, especially Half Genie Hero. I thought Seven Sirens was a misstep in certain ways. It even with my love of Half Genie Hero, it ain't better than Dread. Okay, it's an entirely different game with entirely different visual style and gameplay style and world exploration style. It's totally different, and that's not a fair comparison. And if you recall, that game, Half Genie Hero, was funded on Kickstarter for, I guarantee you, a much less price, much less costly price than it took for Dread. So, thine point is invalid.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that Metroid is somehow, or should be worth the same amount as a game like Hollow Knight is just, it's an unfounded idea, regardless of quality, because when you buy a Metroid game, you know what you're getting into. Hollow Knight is this unknown indie startup, which is a phenomenal game. Don't get me wrong, I'm not bashing Hollow Knight's quality at all, but quality doesn't necessarily equal what a game's value is. Like, Nintendo's built up the Metroid brand over the years. It's like going to a restaurant and ordering a steak, right? There's the T-bone, there's the New York strip, right. And there's the filet mignon. And that's the filet mignon's the most expensive. And that's not to say that it's always the best tasting. Some people might like the New York strip more. But we as a society have agreed that the filet mignon is worth the most. Sometimes you're going to get one that's not as good, but the price isn't going to go down because of that. It's an established part of our culture, and that's where the higher price point comes in. Now, obviously, for a steak, there's other things that go into it. But the point is, quality doesn't necessarily equal price. There's all sorts of factors that you have to consider.
Sure.
And I think it's frustrating that people don't understand. Like, Metroid Dread is worth $60. Its sales have been really good out of the gate, even if it's only 12 hours. The market has determined that first-party Nintendo games are worth that much. That is what people will pay for them. To say that you should steal the game because it's overpriced is just some... And then to try to argue that you're morally right, which many of these people are doing, it's just completely backwards, and I just don't understand how anybody could think that way.
Yeah, it's just so asinine just to think, okay, you're so pissed off about, like, again, games being $60. Like, heck, again, now with PS5 now, we're going to approach that $70 mark soon enough. So you're saying it's still expensive? Come on. And again, Nintendo, as you know, it's always been about good quality, like, for most of the time. So again, with Dread, it's just, again, it's worth it. Honestly, it's worth it. If you want to argue otherwise, like, yeah, I question you.
For me, it's just, if you want to argue that, you know, something should be worth more or less, doesn't that mean that a variety of the first-party games that are just mind-blowing should be worth more? Like, shouldn't Ultimate be, like, double its price because of all the characters we get?
Sure.
And
the fun we have?
Or something like, just to go off-brand a little bit, like The Last of Us, the first one, obviously. Like, when that game came out and it was, like, blowing everybody's mind. Shouldn't that mean that the quality was so good that it should have been a higher price because of all the effort that went into it? So, like, it goes both ways, people. And then, obviously, Last of Us Part 2 should only be worth $5. So, it's like, I am evil, dang it. So, yeah, certain parts of the story could be determined as a good debate. But most of it just falls flat on its face. So, yeah. Grow up, people. And stop pirating games. Gosh dang it. Alright. So, and now, from one source of frustration to another, we move towards our main event. Because, if you recall the last Nintendo Direct, we got news that Nintendo Switch Online would be getting an expansion that would allow you to get N64 games, Sega Genesis games, certain other content, including now the Animal Crossing DLC. And we all knew that there was going to be a price jump because they were emphasizing that there was going to be a price jump in this expansion pack. And now we know what it is. And we're not happy.
Nope.
And we're going to tell you all about it in a Nintendo discussion. Okay, let's ask the obvious question here. What the heck is Nintendo thinking?
Yeah, at that end of that Animal Crossing direct, Emily announced showed the price, like, yeah. It's like, okay, like, we had that price point, of course, also the monthly fee of either 1 month, 3 months, or the entire year, and being only $20. Or if you want to go for a family plan, $35 for multiple members. Here, with the expansion pass, again, N64 games, Sega games, and with the Animal Crossing DLC pack. That thing, and possibly maybe future expansion updates later on down the line, now you jumped it from the $20 price mark to $50. $30 price jump. And if you want to go for the full family plan for multiple members, that's a total of $80. $35 to $80. Ish, Nintendo. I mean, like, Like, it was like, I know there has been some jokes. You posted thought that perhaps this thing is to pay the Disney bill for Sora,
yes.
or even paying the Sega licenses. I don't
yes.
know whatsoever. Like, I don't know why with this price jump, or if they're trying to make Nintendo Switch online service as their at least main lifeline during like a drought season or whatsoever, or if their games don't sell as well. I don't know what they want to do with this, but for this thing to jump so high, it's just like that. The red prices is too dang high.
Yeah. And remember, the base price for the standard version is $20 a year. It's actually now 21. Apparently, they added a little bit to it. I noticed that on my last bill. It's like 21.13. I'm like,
tax.
Taxes.
Yeah. Ugh, stupid taxes. Anyway, so that's $20. And we all agreed, you know, that's less than $2 a month. For online and technically the games you can get, like the NES and SNES get titles. So, you know, that's all worth it. That was fine. They hiked it up by over double. All right? Like, and for extra games that we all said we wanted, actually the Sega stuff was a surprise, but like the N64 stuff, that was all stuff we wanted. And now you're telling me that we have to pay to over double just to get the stuff? Games that have been out for decades, and we have to pay over double. And they're like, well, Todd, it's not that bad in context. Oh, it's worse in context, because let's talk about the console that we love to rag on here on NEP, Xbox. All right, Xbox rarely does anything right. I mean, look at Halo Infinite. I rest my case. Anyway, so but they have a thing that even I cannot ignore as good. It's called Xbox Game Pass.
Yep.
That thing is $10. It has like over 100 games like every month or something like that. And some of those games are first day release titles of their best new games. Not the old, not like old as in original Xbox, but like not like just the old games like we get with the Nintendo Switch Online, but like the new titles that
Halo Infinite will be day one on games.
Exactly. Okay. You're getting a $60 game. On Game Pass, now, granted, there is a time limit and the titles rotate, but that's honestly not the point. Because if you play it right, you could literally pay $10 a month, just a month, to get all these high-end titles, play them as much as you can while they're on, and then when the next rotation comes in, you go, oh, there's a new game I want to play. And then you go and play that one. That's a steal. Everyone does not a lot of people don't understand how Xbox is pulling that off, and they're bringing it everywhere. There was remember all those rumors about it coming to Switch? A lot of people were interested in that because that meant they were going to get a lot of cool games on the Switch from Xbox for $10.
Right.
And now, go ahead.
And the fact that, again, like, aside from the main console of Xbox, you can also play it on PC as well. You can pretty much play it anywhere. Yeah, that's even much more of a raise of the value as well. Yes.
And so for Nintendo to say, hey, you can get all these, you know, classic games from N64 and the Sega Genesis, but only if you pay $50 for a whole year, and we can't even guarantee when the next set of games are going to come out. We know they're coming. They've already announced some of them, like Banjo-Kazooie and such, but We're not even gonna get close to the amount of content that the Xbox Game Pass has.
I mean, heck, even in comparison as well, look at PlayStation Plus as well. Like, even at the if you like non-discounted price of a yearly PlayStation Plus subscription, like that's $50. But again, the fact that you get like three new games out for PS3 or no PS4 or PS5 each month, like that thing is already again they have a steady flow, be it like varying of quality of sure, but you still get three main games for each month. And as we right now, like with Nintendo Switch Online, they're pretty much the most expensive one if you're counting the family pack. I mean, I now gotta pay $80 to cover for me and my cousin, which is like now gotta pay $40 each. It's like unless you have like the full family package of eight members and each one of your chips and $10 is like, yeah, like sure, it may save you some money in a cost scheme of things, grand scale, but the fact that you are inconsistent with going to releases, like you don't, like, when are we going to get these games? When are we going to get NCT4 or Sega Genesis games? Like, is it every month, every 2 months? You have an inconsistent schedule right now. And the fact that even with the basic Nintendo Scripts online subscriptions with SNES and NNES games right now, it's just like, yeah. you're just like trickling down to, and asking to pay this so much. Like, sure, we can play online, like Splatoon, Smash Brothers, online services. Yeah, sure, good. But even that, your online structures, we always criticize many podcasts for a while now that your online instructors is still lacking, if anything else. So the fact that you're asking us now to pay $50 to $80 for the service, like, sure, there's definitely N64 games, and if you're talking the long game route down, like 2 years, 3 years down the road, like maybe it'll be worth it. But as of it is right now, with the current library as it is, it's like, yeah, this is kind of the one thing that even like our angry Aussie Mace says, like, this is the reason why I keep my old retro consoles. It's like, yeah, Nintendo. As of right now, maybe down the line it may be worth it, but as of right now, it's just like, no. No, unless you like really include a lot more N64 games or Genesis games, or even like do something with the Animal Crossing DLC. Like, I don't know, have like a main, like, I don't know, maybe doing with the Mario Party DLC or something of the sort. Include like different DLC packs in that subscription online service. Maybe it'll be worth it. But as it stands right now, with these three major additions to the expansion pack for the extra value right now, is just no, not right now, not right now.
Yeah, you guys did a great job of bringing like all the issue, a lot of the key issues with it. But I also have a real problem with the way they announced this, because they put this in the Nintendo Direct to drum up hype around the Switch, around what's coming out for the console, and they deliberately left the price off. They knew what the price was. They didn't decide 2 weeks ago what the price was. They knew what the price was, and they knew what the reaction would be. And this just feels like a dirty marketing trick. And it worked. They got so many people, oh my gosh, N64 is coming to Switch. Oh, Genesis 2? This is incredible. But in their back pocket, they knew what they were about to drop, and that's that this is costs $30 extra in addition to your regular price plan. We're not improving how our online infrastructure works in terms of our actual games. We're not improving anything meaningfully. They gave us the SNES stuff for free. They added that to the service. Mm-hmm. That was great. That was a step in the right direction. It made it more valuable for sure. I don't even think they needed to give you the N64 stuff for free. I feel like originally I felt that way. The more I think about it, it's, you know, they're expanding the catalog to a new audience. It's great to have these games. They're higher budget. They, you know, they're, I guess it's harder to find N64 titles. I'm not sure if they're on the Wii U eShop actually, but either way, I don't mind paying an extra $5 for N64 titles and put the Genesis titles in there. Mm-hmm. If you want to increase it $5, that's fine. $10, you know, I'll pay that too. At this value, as somebody who has all of these games already and has played them 100 times, it's just absolutely not worth it. And I just am really, I'm disappointed in the way that they released it, because they really are trying to pull the wool over consumers' eyes on this, and it just feels wrong. It just doesn't feel like a scrupulous business tactic. And I get that it's all about money, but I love Nintendo because in so many ways they've like been a pillar of morality over in my life, right? Like, I think about my favorite Nintendo characters. You've got Link and Mario. Like, the characters themselves, especially as a kid, I would take a lot from them in how to be good. So I associate Nintendo with good. And this is just bad. It's unscrupulous. It's poor behavior. I will say, though, and I'm just, that's my takeaways. I am very against this. If it's kind of smart in that Animal Crossing DLC, like Animal Crossing sold 25 million, somewhere around there.
Right, right,
like,
at the beginning of COVID. Right,
it's right. Maybe even more now. Like, the sales for Animal Crossing are great. A lot of people who have a Switch have Animal Crossing. And for them, you're getting Animal Crossing, like a massive expansion, as we outlined, and N64 games. And the expansion's worth $25 for Animal Crossing itself. And then you're just paying like $5 extra for the N64 game. So, like, if you're in that camp, if I was in that camp, I probably wouldn't be as mad as I am. But as somebody who doesn't like Animal Crossing, you're screwing those people over.
Yeah.
Right, right, right. Like, as I said, like, if it was, like, something else, like, I don't know, like, Smash Bros. DLC, you include that Smash Bros. DLC, like, okay, maybe it would be worth it. or like I don't know what's Nintendo's roadmap down the line. Like, are they gonna include DLC packs in the subscription services down the line? Like, I don't know. As I said, Mario Party, Shin Megami Tensei, or like other mainline games down the line, if they're gonna include that. I mean, oh no, I just had the image, like, if they're gonna do something like that for Splatoon 3, like have like the Splatoon, the next DLC pack in that subscription online service, then okay. Like,
almost definitely not. There's nothing in Nintendo's history that would make me think that they would do that. Unless this comes out and nobody buys it.
And don't forget, you can still get the Animal Crossing DLC without the upgraded expansion.
Right.
So
right.
Like they were smart enough to make sure to do that, because if they didn't, that would tick off a lot of people.
Right. And also, as a detail as well, that I was brought by Cuba Keef as well, that this thing you had to pay in a full year. It's no longer monthly payments anymore.
Yeah.
Like, in the original plan, you could pay 1, 3, or one year. This time, you got to pay the full entire price.
Yep.
It's just like, yeah, way to be kind of anti-consumer, Nintendo.
Makes me think that they are trying to put upper sales figures out, like a better a quarterly report out, just because that doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's nobody who benefits from removing the monthly subscription. I'm not sure if, like, I'm Nintendo and I'm running the math on this. The pricing is built so that they would get more over time for monthly subs. So why would they take that option away, right? Like, it's slightly cheaper to buy it all in one shot than it is to pay monthly, at least for the current model. I think it's like $2 monthly, and it's 24 for the year that way and 20 regularly. I have no idea why they would remove that after, aside from the fact that, like, the pandemic last year, they had huge sale or great financial results, and this year, even though they're doing really well, they don't want to show a huge drop from last year, so they want this everybody to buy this right now so they can say, look, our money, like, you know, we got a huge net boost from this one thing and it bolstered our financials over the years. I don't know if that's true, but that's my theory on it.
I just think Disney just said, hey, if you want Sora, you're going to have to pay like $1 billion. And Nintendo did it because they want Sora. Now they got to make the billion back. Because think about it, that would be such a Disney thing to do. It's like, oh, you want this character? Well, here it is. No, you got to pay the money. Well, how much money? Oh, let's see. How much did Avengers Endgame make? $2 billion, sir. About $1 billion. You know, let's just round it down. It's a sale price. Sale price for Sora. You know, I don't know why they're doing this. This is the rare greed move from Nintendo. And again, we were fine with the $20 a year because it was honestly a fair enough price for the content we were getting. But then the $30 price jump, and we're getting games that, you know, they're not new ones. And I'll put it this way. If they pulled an Xbox Game Pass and said, hey, if you get the expansion version, you're going to have access to some of the best-selling Switch games ever, like Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, Mario Kart Deluxe. If they did that, I would defend it. I would defend it at least a little bit more, because that's kind of like...
People would love it.
Yeah, people would love it. Yes, it's still more than the Game Pass, but I don't know. But it would at least be more understandable that they're raising the price that much for this content. Whereas here, we're getting old games, so you're only going to get this expansion pack if you're feeling nostalgic and or you've never played these games before and you feel like, you know what, maybe I should try these games out. That's a very small market, and let's be honest here, we already know that the buying of Switch Online to the Switch is not one-to-one. All right, we've known that for years. So I almost wonder if they're trying to do this to incite people to buy the Switch, and they just don't get that we don't, or sorry, Switch Online, and they just don't get that we don't want Switch Online unless it's as cheap as possible. Because it was free originally, remember?
Yes.
It was free, and then they're like, no, we probably should charge you for it. And like, okay, fine. And we'll give you any SNES games. NES games, like, okay, sure, like, which ones? Oh, we'll give you some. That's not what we asked Nintendo. Yes, it is. No, it's really not, Nintendo. So, as I said in our Discord chat, one step forward, two steps back. This is what Nintendo's becoming known for. They do a good thing. with the Switch. They do a bad thing with Switch Online. They do a good thing with all the great first-party titles and third-party exclusives. They do a bad thing with Switch Online Expansion Pack. They do a good thing with Sora. Yeah, we'll wait. I'll give them a pass. Nothing could ever take them back from Sora, but they're going to try. They're going to try. They're going to try.
It's just like that situation of Nintendo give and Nintendo take it away.
And Tyler, to actually counter one of your points from earlier, I don't think they gave us the price at the Direct because they were trying to build up hype for it. I think they didn't give us the price because they knew if they told us then, we would be mad for a long time.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So, like, yeah. They knew. They knew we'd react this way, and they didn't care. And that's very non-Nintendo. So, yeah.
Yeah, and
even
just
worse,
as
they kind of didn't care, and they decided to be deceptive about it. Like,
yes.
They cared, and they knew. They were like, okay, we don't want to put that here. We'll just put it out in this Animal Crossing thing here. And yeah, it was dirty.
Right. And just to add more, like a slight salt to it as well. Like they also released it, released the listings and pre-orders for the N64 controller and the Sega Genesis controller, which at the time of this recording, the N64 controller is currently sold out until later on October for restock, while Sega Genesis controllers is still up available for pre-order on Nintendo Online Store right now. So if you want to go play these games on their native controllers, then yeah, it's going to happen again with the SNES controllers and the controls are back up again.
I don't know. One of the biggest benefits of these coming to Switch in general is not having to play these games with that controller. Like having a pro controller to play Banjo-Kazooie with is going to be so much nicer than having the N64 controller.
Granted, yeah. I mean, now I think about it, like, when you want to get the modern day controllers or play as the good old classic style? I do wonder. Yeah, that's a good question.
All right. Well, with that, we are going to end this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, last week. One second.
Yeah, he's not
loading.
Ready.
One
noting.
Second.
Noting.
One second.
Elevator scene. Elevator scene.
Yep. Alice Samus is in the elevator. Yeah. We asked you, we love the Asura announcement, but how did you feel? 80% of you loved it, 20% of you liked it, and 0% of you were meh, and 0% of you disliked it. So that's pretty good. People really liked it.
Yeah, I also want to note that I watched the Asura trailer again the other day, and I cried. Now, forever, I will cry at that trailer. It's too
That
cute.
Is the true ending for Sakurai, by the way. Not going on vacation. He gets beamed up in a ray of light as the Kingdom Hearts plays.
It was like, I am going away now, so never ask me for anything again. All right, for this one, we're going to go right into the Nintendo Switch Online. Do you think that Nintendo made a mistake with the Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack price? Yes? No? Doesn't matter, I'm not getting it anyway. Or something like that, Tyler. And of course, let us know what you think on this topic in general. Do you think it's fair when Nintendo Switch Online is being priced at with the expansion pack? Do you think Nintendo is pushing their luck a little bit? Or have you already gotten it? It comes out on the 5th. But are you going to get it when it comes out on the 5th? Let us know. And of course, have you got Nintendo Dread? I'm feeling the Dread for Nintendo right now because the fans aren't very happy. But no, Metroid Dread, have you gotten that? How are you enjoying it? Are you excited for G4 TV to come back? What do you want Daddy Sakurai to do next? Have you gotten a Nintendo OLED? And if so, what do you think about it? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Tellius, Tyler, and Wario Will, I am Triforce. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, but we are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag! Wait. What do you mean the flag's behind a paywall? I'm not paying to raise the dang flag! Raise the dang flag!